Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My co-worker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. It's a trash Tuesday, so if there's anything that you want to trash, let's take out the trash today. Hit us up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Also on the phones, toll free at 855-212-4CBS. Last night, the New York Jets get an impressive victory, 48-17, absolutely dismantling Matt Patricia and the Lions in Patricia's first head coaching game of the regular season. In the late game, you saw the Los Angeles Rams finally pull away from the Raiders in the second half. Last night, I thought that the broadcast overhyped the expectations surrounding Sam Darnold, despite it being New York. I thought the comparisons to Joe Namath were completely historically incorrect and misleading. Yes, the New York Jets had drafted Sam Darnold higher than any other quarterback in their draft history outside of Joe Namath. But Joe Namath was a cultural shift, because Joe Namath was being fought for by two leagues. Joe Namath, by virtue of signing with the New York Jets and Sonny Werblin and that organization in the mid-60s, immediately shifted the expectations of what you were watching in the AFL. Joe Namath was a star in college that played in massive bowl games, that played for a traditional powerhouse in its prime for Bear Bryant, and he chose a renegade league that was in its infancy, that had not had credibility yet on a national level, and the NFL was sneering, joking, poking fun at the product that was out there. You had crumbling stadiums, you had crowds in some cases that were minuscule. You had a league desperately fighting for financial viability, and this league signed the Andrew Luck of the day, the Peyton Manning of the day. Imagine this spring football league, the AFL that we have coming in, or the new XFL. Imagine they signed Baker Mayfield, or they signed Jameis Winston, or they signed Carson Wentz. Well, that would change your expectation of the AAF or the XFL. Sam Darnold being drafted by the Jets within the NFL is not the same. And I thought that was completely unrealistic to make those two comparisons last night. However, Sam Darnold's poised. Sam Darnold is confident. Sam Darnold is confident without being arrogant. Sam Darnold goes out there, and I think his teammates know one thing that's super important. He's in control. It doesn't mean he'll be perfect. It doesn't mean that he'll win every game. But it means he's in control of the moment. And that is something that is an intangible. It's not QBR. It's not accuracy rating. It's not Pro Football Focus numbers. What it is your teammates go into the huddle and they go, he's got it. He's got it. We've got this. If he throws a pick six on his first pass of the game, it's all right. He's got it. And you can't say that about many rookie quarterbacks.
Third and two at the 41 of Detroit. Darnold, pump fake. He's got time. Darnold launches a deep one towards the end zone, and it is caught. Oh, Robbie Anderson, what a grab. Touchdown, Jets.
That's Ian Eagle on Westwood One last night. That was maybe his best throw of the game, but he had a number of really good throws as well. And for that to come after throwing a pick six of the first pass of the game for him says a lot. As I mentioned earlier in the show, and I've talked about this a lot since the draft, I liked Josh Rosen, I liked Sam Darnold as the two best quarterbacks in this draft. And one of the reasons I liked those two guys best was I felt they would have command of a huddle. I thought that their temperament was perfect. Now, I think that people think that Josh Rosen's arrogant. I didn't read it as arrogant. I read it as really smart, and sometimes really smart people come off as arrogant because they're smarter than other people. But for Sam Darnold, and I think Baker Mayfield has now proven this as well, at least through the preseason, there is a belief he's got it. He's got it. And so many times, quarterbacks in this league look like they don't got it. Hell, Matthew Stafford last night looked like he didn't have it. Derek Carr last night looked like he didn't have it. Those guys have made Pro Bowls. I'm certainly not about to say that Sam Darnold is going to be Joe Namath or a Hall of Famer or anything like that. What I am saying is I think that his demeanor, his temperament, and his ability are very early proving out that he's ready for that. And that's part of this battle. It really is. It's part of the battle. And let's also put this on the table. Saquon Barkley better have an amazing career. I'm not putting Sam Darnold in the Hall of Fame. But Saquon Barkley is a running back that was taken number two overall, the pick before Sam Darnold went number three. There's going to be a point in time in the next 2 to 3 years where the New York Giants desperately need a quarterback. Week one, Eli was fine. By week 15, I'm not so certain. But at some point in time at 37 years old, within the span of Darnold's career, the Giants will have a come-to-Jesus moment about Eli Manning. What do we do? What do we do? And they took a running back. You can get a running back in a lot of places of the draft. You can get the running back position very late in the game. You usually can't get quarterbacks there. And for the New York Giants to bet the house on Saquon Barkley, that is an enormous risk. And that pressure, every time that Darnold plays well, that pressure is going to be on the other team in that stadium that took a running back instead. And let's just say hypothetically, by year two or year three of Sam Darnold's career, he has become one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. And Tony Romo says by the end of his career, he's going to be the best quarterback in the NFL. Let's say that by year three, Sam Darnold is a top five quarterback in the league. And Eli Manning is toast. And the Giants have to get on that carousel that the Bills have spun and the Browns have spun and so many teams have spun forever. The Cardinals have spun and have to go try to find that franchise QB. And the guy across town in the same stadium was on their board ready to take, and they declined that opportunity. It's going to haunt Gettleman and the Giants unless Barkley becomes phenomenal. If Sam Darnold is just very good. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. Hit us on Twitter as well. DA on CBS. And let me just bring up one thing more from Joe Namath. Broadway Joe was asked by the New York Post what he saw from Sam Darnold last night. And I thought that Namath walked the perfect line of he can be really good, but let's not go crazy yet. Darnold, quote, should be around a long time playing a high grade of football at quarterback. And the thing that we get caught in, this trap in modern day sports analysis where guys are either boom or bust, that you must be a Hall of Famer or you're a bum. Unless you're a Hall of Famer, it's not worth it. And there is a huge middle ground there. Huge. You know, I know that Matthew Stafford had a terrible night last night, but Matthew Stafford has been the starting quarterback of the Detroit Lions for a decade and has gone to Pro Bowls and thrown for 5,000 yards, etc. He's not going to go to the Hall of Fame, but you cannot say that's a bust of a draft pick by the Detroit Lions. If Sam Darnold ends up as Matthew Stafford, that's a pretty good solution to your quarterback problem for a pretty long time. He doesn't have to be a Hall of Famer. But you're looking for a guy to be around a long time playing a high grade of football quarterback. I talked about Carson Palmer. We're going to have Carson Palmer come up here later on in the hour. He's not going to the Hall of Fame. Never played in the Super Bowl. But a guy that was good enough to get to the playoffs regularly, to throw for 4,000 yards six different times, to drag a bad franchise into the playoffs in the Cincinnati Bengals, and then get the Cardinals back into the NFC Championship game. That's a really good career. He was the number one pick overall. He didn't have to be a Hall of Famer for it to be the right pick. And if Sam Darnold plays high-grade football quarterback for a long time, that's a winner for the Jets. It's a Trash Tuesday. Toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes. You could save 15% or more on car insurance. Adrian's in Oregon on a Trash Tuesday. Adrian, who are you trashing?
You know, I would like to trash the Green Bay Packers front office for letting Khalil Mack go. Not just not picking him up, but letting him go to the Bears. I've been a Green Bay fan forever. I'll stay a Green Bay fan for the rest of my life. But, you know, in my opinion, the last time we gave Rodgers a disruptive defense, a defense that could score, we won it all in 2012. And despite the price tag to let somebody of Mack's caliber go, let alone let him go to a division rival, I just think was ridiculous.
Trash him.
Let's face it. That's straight trash.
Here's what I find hysterical about the Oakland Raiders trading away Khalil Mack, and to your point about other teams saying that the cost is too high. I made this comparison yesterday on the show. If you told the Chicago Bears this year, you can use your first-round pick on Khalil Mack, and I guarantee you he's going to be a Hall of Famer for you, or a perennial All-Pro, one of the best defensive players of the NFL. But you've got to use two number ones on him. You've got to sacrifice next year's number one. But I guarantee he's going to be a Hall of Famer or at least a perennial Pro Bowler, one of the best defensive players in the league. The Bears would say yes. Yeah, I'll take that. If I got to sacrifice next year's one, I'm drafting a guy that's going to be maybe a Hall of Famer. Yeah, I would do that. Yeah, okay, you can take next year's one. Well, that's exactly what the Bears just did. They traded away two ones for Khalil Mack and got a two in return. When teams say, I just can't trade that much draft collateral. If on draft day, you were guaranteed that player of that career, would you trade that draft collateral for that player's career? And my answer is, more than likely, you would say yes. So why suddenly in trades will you say, no, that's too hefty of a price? Jimmy tweets, I'm trashing my pizza delivery guy on Saturday, or lack thereof, because the driver got arrested for an outstanding warrant after getting pulled over for having a headlight out. Hashtag never prepay for pizza.
Warm, sizzling garbage.
Patrick tweets, I'm trashing the entire Lions organization, but I can't because I don't even have the energy anymore. Hashtag raising the white flag.
Stinky debris.
Chad tweets, I'm trashing the Lions as well. It's going to be a long season if this is the crap I can expect every week. Mack is going to run over us. And what about the Vikings defense? Trash the whole organization. Failed in the offseason, and it shows right now.
Hold your nose. That's some smelly rubbish.
Super Dave tweets, I debated listening to the show this morning, but you know what? I am listening. Not only did my Lions break my heart, but costed me wins in both fantasy games this week. Hashtag Mraz is owed an apology. It's my fault. Hashtag bad karma.
Splash Brothers? More like the Trash Brothers.
Courtney's the first lady of Trash Tuesday. She tweets, I'm trashing that awkward window of time when you're walking ahead of someone and you don't know if you're supposed to wait to hold the door for them. Or even worse, if someone holds it for you and you feel like you have to run towards the door in acknowledgement.
Beep, beep. sanitation just arrived.
It's just awkward. You just don't know what to do there in those spots. Be politer. When we come back here on the show, soundcheck your best audio of the day, including Darren Lee knowing the Lions plays that were coming before they were called. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Grab a surge protector. You're about to be zapped.
DA, what's up, brother? How you feeling? I love listening to your show, man. I listen to you every day. I can't wait for it, and I hate when it ends. Your gimmicks are the best gimmicks. Want to say I appreciate you guys, and have a good day.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
The mothership where the gimmicks are the best gimmicks. Welcome back, DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Remember, we're on Sirius XM Channel 206. If you're outside of your normal listening area, perhaps your local affiliate, local regional, isn't carrying us. You can't get us in your area. That's okay. Sirius XM Channel 206. This player of the week brought to you by Granger. Taking a look at the one who got it done this week, Justin Verlander. Verlander returns to Detroit for the first time since he was acquired by the Astros last season. Strikes out 10 Tigers. Throws 7 innings. Allows just 6 hits and 2 earned runs. Houston gets the win 3-2. Verlander this year, 15-9, 2.72 ERA, and a standing ovation from his former fan base. The Player of the Week brought to you by Granger. Granger's got your back when it comes to the safety and industrial supplies that keep your facility running. Get what you need when you need it at Granger.com. Stacy's next up at a Trash Tuesday, listening in Topeka to CBS Sports Radio. Stacy, who are you trashing?
I'm trashing the whole Charger organization this Tuesday morning. What a waste of Phillip Rivers. He is such a great player.
Phillip Rivers is, you're right, walking in dead man's land right now. Trash him!
Let's face it, that's straight trash.
That's a stadium that seats 30,000 people. There were 15,000 Chiefs fans there, and there were still unsold seats. Dan Fouts took Chargers fans to task over the weekend. But, I mean, man, when you have 10,000 people showing up to an NFL game to support their local team, that is an enormous problem. Justin tweets, I'm trashing my wife, who's using the Eminem / Machine Gun Kelly diss tracks to diss me in a bunch of texts. She just said, quote, I'm sick of your aching back and that bum knee. Let's talk about it.
Hold your nose. That's some smelly rubbish.
That's rough, man. When the wife goes all Eminem, Machine Gun Kelly on you, that's a tough fight. You can't win that. Brooks tweets, I'm trashing our janitor at my office for excessive cleaning. They clean the bathrooms 5 times a day and usually when I gotta go, which makes me have to run to the other side of the building just to use the bathroom because they're always cleaning.
Warm, sizzling garbage.
Alex tweets, I'm trashing Chucky's offense for not showing up for the last 40 minutes of that game last night. A high school team can play the whole game and still make points, unlike the performance from the Raiders. Hashtag, get them out.
Splash Brothers, more like the Trash Brothers.
Get them out.
Let's get to your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
I mean, the Raiders might have lost in ugly fashion last night. Derek Carr might have had a terrible game, but Derek Carr says it was really cool to see John Gruden in the locker room.
It's really cool to watch our coaches go throughout the locker room and do, you know, how Coach Gruden has his stuff, you know, so it was pretty neat. But it's always disappointing to lose. You know, we don't want to do that, especially in the first game. So, but we got 15 more, and I think that we're going to be pretty good.
Got to say, this feels like the emperor has no clothes with John Gruden. John Gruden had the ability to really hold court in his last job. Because he was the analyst. He was kind of the hero of the broadcast. Everybody on that set seemed to love him. He did the quarterback camp with the college kids. And what are the college kids going to do? Question John Gruden's acumen? So he could sit there and he could pick apart players and teams and coaches and games without any fear of reprisal, without any fear of criticism. He was beloved on set from his coworkers, and college kids were bowing down, genuflecting in front of him every offseason. So John Gruden got to think, I think, that he's brilliant. And I think other people started buying into this. Well, John Gruden won a Super Bowl, and John Gruden has all of these great quotes, and everybody loves John Gruden as an analyst. And John Gruden is teaching all these college kids what to do, and they seem like they're in total awe of him, so he must be really smart. And then you look at this offseason. Guys, this offseason was filled with ridiculous decisions. Number one, Jordy Nelson, yes. Michael Crabtree, no. Weird. Number two, Muscle Hamster, Doug Martin, he's still playing? Raiders said, yeah, let's sign him. Number three, they traded away a third-round pick for Martavis Bryant. Third round. Bryant might not play this season. Martavis Bryant cost them a third-round pick, and he's already been released. Number four, traded away the best defensive player in the game, arguably. Number five, traded for A.J. McCarron, a guy that couldn't beat out Nathan Peterman for that job in Buffalo. Did you see Nathan Peterman on Sunday? They lost by 47 points. These are the acquisitions made by John Gruden. And here is Derek Carr going, man, it's just really cool to see John Gruden do John Gruden stuff.
It's really cool.
And I got to admit, last night of the sideline, I'm like, it's kind of cool to have John Gruden back on the sideline. It's kind of better than Jack Del Rio. But then I realized, why do we say that? What's the reason? Because he won a Super Bowl 20 years ago? I mean, it's been a long time. Been a long time, and the end of the Tampa Bay era was not good for John Gruden. I think there's an element of people don't want to tell John Gruden, he ain't got it. I mean, you look the part, you sound the part, the sound bites are the same, but what are you doing here?
Coach Gruden has his stuff, you know, so it's pretty neat.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of neat. It's kind of like being in a wax figure museum. You're like, that really looks like Denzel Washington.
Oh my God.
That really looks like John Gruden's coaching us. That's really cool.
It's really cool.
Mike McCarthy on clearing Aaron Rodgers in the second half Sunday.
Anytime a player's injury, you know, particularly when they bring him inside, based on the injury, there's a protocol of what they go through to see if the doctor would clear him to go back out. So not getting the specifics of each and every injury and the protocols of each and every one, but that process went on throughout the second quarter. I want to say into halftime. At halftime, we were preparing as an offensive staff to play with Deshaun. And then shortly, you know, before we got out to the field, as, you know, we were walking to the tunnel, had a chance to talk to Aaron and Dr. McKenzie, and he was cleared to go.
Well, that was painful. That's the second best coach of the NFL? No way in hell. So we don't know what's going to now happen on Sunday for the Vikings game for the Packers. If Aaron Rodgers is going to be able to play, I would imagine that it's going to swell up pretty bad this week, and it probably is already really swollen. Now, Aaron Rodgers said in the post-game interview on the field, I'm playing against Minnesota. So we'll see if he holds to that. He's confident, but I'm sure he's limping around this week, and I'm sure it blew up like a balloon after that game. And finally, Darren Lee, Jets linebacker, told Westwood One, the Jets just kind of knew exactly what the Lions were doing. So thanks, Matt Patricia.
Just the formations. I mean, just film. You know, we know when they get into that type of a bunch set, you know, either going to get a snag route or going to get a ram route. And I knew where I had to be. It's going to either come right to me if he throws it to the short route. So it was a great read. And, you know, I was even glad to touch the paint.
That was funny last night. Is all the Jets were like, yeah, we knew it was going to happen. Yeah, no, we knew. Yeah, we just studied and we knew. It was pretty obvious. I mean, they were all just shocked that, oh, my God, yeah, well, we know exactly what's going to happen. And Chris Spielman said this during the preseason about the Lions. Opponents are going to know what the Lions are going to call. That's your head coach, Matt Patricia, in his first game.
But I'm a genius, right? But I'm a rocket scientist, right? I got my backwards hat and my pencil and my beard. I'm smart because I don't look like everybody else. I do it my way. Boo!
And then you just get romped on by a rookie quarterback and a guy in Todd Bowles who Jets fans want to run out of town. That's your sound check. Jason tweets, I'm trashing any parent today who has a birthday party for their child during NFL Sundays when it starts at 1 p.m. Eastern time. Hashtag little wet, little drippy.
Hey, I'm Peter Schwartz.
I don't know.
I'm a little wet, a little drippy.
I don't know if Peter's done this, but Bogus, have you done this?
I have not done it. We had that issue. What day is today? Tuesday, on this past Sunday.
Now, we live in a very NFL-heavy region because college football is not huge here in New York. In other parts of the country, you might say the same thing about a college football Saturday.
Mm, but might. Weddings, birthday parties?
Touche. So, Mraz, what do you say about a child's birthday party at 1 p.m. on a Sunday?
Make new friends, kid. No way.
Drive
Parents
yourself.
Are lost.
Make new friends, kid. It's
That's
the kid's
it.
Fault.
Yeah, I'm not driving you to a kid's birthday party. You want an Uber? I'll send you an Uber. I don't care how old you are.
Send your kid in a cab. Go check out the birthday party. I got football to watch. No, it's one of those things where you just can't be around, right? Like you drop the kid off at 1 o'clock or 12:30, then you got to be back to watch your own football game. Then you come pick them up during halftime or post game show.
Right, but I'd also argue, like, what are you teaching your kids if you're not teaching them to watch football on a Sunday?
What'd you do in that spot, folks?
My daughter got sick, so we didn't go to the party.
Oh, was, huge.
Yeah.
Good job by her.
I know. I felt bad being excited that she wasn't feeling well, but I was like, I believe her. I don't think she's making this up. We should let her stay home. And then my son was like, I don't feel well either. Now, he was full of it.
Yeah.
But we're like, oh, maybe there's a bug going around.
Yeah.
Let's take this this carefully.
Suddenly, you become very, very cautious.
Well, no, what I did was I'll take him, like, originally, like, trying to be the, like, the martyr here. And I was like, no, I'll go. And then he jumped in from my defense and said he didn't feel well either. So we were all out.
Carson Palmer joins us next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
It's the DA Show, only on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back to CBS Sports Radio, everybody. Thanks for being with us. DA with you, and our next guest is a 3-time Pro Bowler and a Heisman Trophy winner. Football Life is an amazing series done by NFL Network and the group at NFL Films. It's always such fascinating stories of those in the NFL and around the NFL. And this next one that comes up this Friday, I'm really excited about. It features sit-down interviews with Larry Fitzgerald, Bruce Arians, Pete Carroll, Chad Ochocinco, and more. It debuts A Football Life Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern time on NFL Network. Carson Palmer joins us this morning here on the show. Carson, good morning.
Yeah, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure, man. I'm doing great. Thanks so much for joining us. And this is a great subject, I think, for A Football Life because your career has had so many different layers, whether it was where you played in the NFL or your college career or the injury, et cetera. So it feels like there's so much to get into. If we start back and when you decided to go to USC, that was before the glory days of the Pete Carroll, Reggie Bush era. So when you decided in the late 90s to attend USC, what drew you there?
Well, I grew up in Southern California. In Southern California, SC is SC. I mean, the tradition, the history, playing at the Coliseum, getting to play close to my family and friends. They could come to games. And as you said, you know, it was before the glory days. You know, SC was so dominant in the 70s and early on. And then, you know, when I had gone there, it had been a while since there had been much to cheer about, much to be happy about. And I kind of wanted to be a part of, you know, helping to bring that back. And then after I left and the dominance with the Pete Carroll era, it was very, you know, I was excited to watch all of that and to be a very, very small part of that resurgence of the program. It's such a special place and such a great education, so many great teachers and professors and the coaches I got to play for. So I was very, very blessed with that opportunity to attend SC.
I would say that you had a huge influence on bringing back that program. You end up winning the Heisman Trophy, and from there they just kind of ascended, won national championships, et cetera. Bringing back a program, bringing back a fan base to glory days, I wonder, did you feel a little bit of a reset in that when you went to Cincinnati, because they had not made the playoffs in 15 years. They had not had a winning record in 15 years. And then you were finally able to get them there in 2005 and do all of that. Clearly, they were in glory years like USC. But did it feel like kind of doing the same thing, kind of a repeat of what you went to USC for when you were drafted by the Bengals?
Yeah, I mean, back then I was young and dumb. I thought, well, you know, they've been really bad for a long time. Well, I'll go there and change that, and we'll win a bunch of Super Bowls. And I was naive. I was 20-something years old. I was young. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, and that it's just not that simple, and it doesn't happen like that. So it wasn't quite the same feeling, but I'll never forget that first year. I mean, I think the year before, my last year in college, I think they won maybe one game. Maybe one or two games. And then for us to win the AFC North a couple years later and have a home playoff game, and I don't know how many years it had been. Unfortunately, that game ended pretty quick on the second play of the game. But, you know, it was a special time those first couple years in Cincinnati.
Carson Palmer joins us this morning here on the show. He's got A Football Life done by NFL Films, NFL Network, coming up this Friday, which is always such a fantastic series. I'm sure your series will delve into the hit by Kimo von Alhoffen in that game in 2005. I mean, on that throw, you hit Chris Henry for a 66-yard hit, and, you know, the crowd's going crazy, and it feels like this whole new era of Cincinnati Bengals football, and then there you are on the turf. I know you played 9 years after that hit and had a lot of successful seasons after that, but did you feel like your career was altered permanently with that hit?
No. I mean, that was just one of the challenges throughout my entire career and one of the challenges in the process and something that helped shape and mold me into the player and the man I am today. And it was very unfortunate. There's no doubt about that, but you know, everybody's got a different journey and a different process, and that was a part of mine. It was kind of like right when my career took off, there was this huge hurdle and this huge, massive thing to overcome. And it was just part of my journey and part of my process. And yeah, I would love to have won the Super Bowl that year, and to lose to the Steelers and then watch them go on and win it was tough. But everybody's got a different process and a different journey, and that was where mine took me.
What is the most significant lesson that you took out of that experience?
Just how quick it can change. You know, that was my first Pro Bowl year, and you know, I finished, you know, somewhere in the top couple of MVP votes at the end of the year, and didn't win that, but everything was, you know, headed in the right direction, and you know, there was so much excitement, and then all of a sudden, you got to start from scratch and you got to go through reconstructive knee surgery. And I had a bad one that first time. So it took a lot of hard work. It took a lot of time. And, you know, as everything's rolling along so great, you got to, you know, you win the AFC North, you get a, you know, a home playoff game, and then two plays into the game, it's over. You just realize how fast it can be taken away from you. And, you know, you look at somebody like Andrew Luck, who is on top of the world, and then he has this shoulder injury, and then he doesn't play for a handful of years. I think he probably went through kind of the same feeling of, man, everything, I was riding high and everything just stopped and halted. And you just realize how precious a career is and how precious the game of football can be and how quickly it can have you stand on the sidelines and with crutches and a t-shirt on while your teammates are out there playing.
In Cincinnati, it felt like polar opposites, you and Chad Johnson, then Chad Ochocinco. You were never one to draw attention to yourself, and he always was one to seek out that attention. Did that cause any clashes between you two? Was it hard at times trying to build a football relationship when he was seemingly built differently in attention-seeking?
Not even for a second. I love Chad to this day. Chad was one of the guys that shaped me. Chad, one thing that people don't know about Chad is the tireless worker that he was. Chad put so much time and effort into his craft, and we spent summers together. We would go down to other, you know, we went to an Indianapolis Colts game on Monday night to watch Marvin Harrison and Peyton Manning work, and you know, we spent hours and hours and hours in the off season together, training and throwing and working on routes and working on different routes. You know, he and I are built very differently, as far as, you know, as what you were, you know, alluding to with the attention and stuff. And that's who Chad was. And that's one of the things I loved about Chad. So we never had turmoil, or we had miscommunications, and we fought like brothers, just like any teammate does. And any two teammates that have so much pressure and stress, and so much, you know, there's so many people that wanted, you know, us to be a certain way, and we acted, you know, the way we each acted and put our work in. And we had some amazing years together. I mean, he had some dominant years where he led the league in every statistical category. And that was all because of his hard work. And that's one thing I learned from Chad is it doesn't matter how many Pro Bowls you've been to or how much success you've had individually. You can't stop working. And that's one thing Chad never did.
That's a really great insight on Chad Johnson, Chad Ochocinco. Carson Palmer joins us here on the show. You end up getting traded to Oakland in 2011. Over those two seasons, you only ended up winning four games per in each of those seasons. How did you feel in your time in Oakland?
It was odd. There's no doubt. It was. I got traded there the week that Al Davis died. You know, so it was an odd time. It was just an odd time structurally from a organizational standpoint. You know, Al had been you know, such a figure within that organization and such a decision maker. And then when he was gone, there was some turmoil and there was some crazy changes in the roster because there were so many salary cap issues from years past and so much turnover. And it was an odd time, but there's nothing like playing for the Oakland Raiders. There's nothing like being in the black hole, being a part of the Raider Nation, going to play against, you know, the Minnesota Vikings in Minnesota and showing up at the team hotel and there's 4,000 fans sitting there waiting as you enter the hotel. And every stadium you go into, the Raider Nation is there no matter where you're playing in this country. So that part was special. I mean, there's a handful of guys that I still love to this day that I had a chance to play with and be teammates with. And it was definitely an odd time and a weird a roller coaster you know, part of my career, but there is something special about the Raider Nation. I think everybody that's ever played for the Raiders knows that and would agree with that.
That's really interesting because, you know, most people would think that those times for you, you'd rather forget, that you wouldn't have such sentimentality or nostalgia around that. So does it make you sad to know that Oakland Raider fans won't have a team in Oakland coming up here soon?
Absolutely. I hate that that's happened. Because as bad as the organization has been, you know, over the last couple decades, that group of fans and the Raider Nation has not faltered. They have not changed. They still show up to games. They still love their team and love the Raiders. And I hate to see that they're moving. And it hurts to see. I think everybody that's ever walked into the Oakland Coliseum, O.co, whatever, I don't even know what it's called anymore. But any player that has played in front of that fan base just feels a connection. There's a different connection to the Raider Nation than there probably is anywhere else in the league. And I hate to see that they're not going to be in Oakland anymore.
You have that wonderful end of your career in Arizona, Bruce Arians, Pro Bowl, 13-3. You throw for 4,000 yards, a couple of seasons there. That must have felt like a real kind of blessing, a refreshing, you know, kind of restart for you after the turmoil of the previous couple of seasons. How do you look back on that?
Oh, with nothing but love and admiration for that opportunity to play for Michael Bidwell, to play for Steve Keim and Bruce Arians and the guys I got to play with and the wins I got to be a part of. And, you know, no doubt that was, I was so blessed and fortunate to end up there and be a part of that style of an organization where, everything is about winning. It's not about money. It's not about saving money here or there. Everything is focused on winning, and everything is focused on giving the players and the coaches everything they need to perform at their best. And getting a chance to be a part of that atmosphere, and I think Steve Keim is one of the best GMs in the National Football League. I think Michael Bidwell is one of the best owners in all of sports. So to have that opportunity and that chance was amazing. It was an amazing part of my life.
Carson Palmer, A Football Life, premieres Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, NFL Network. The one-hour show features sit-downs with Carson, Larry Fitzgerald, Bruce Arians, Pete Carroll, Chad Ochocinco, and so much more. I'm really looking forward to this. My final question is, I just saw in the news that you sold your Scottsdale home a couple of months ago, maybe a couple of weeks ago, and it said there was a home theater in there. Did you ever watch Red Zone or watch a game film in like a giant home theater? Or was that one of those things just built before you bought it?
Well, it was definitely there before I bought it. But, you know, to be honest, I need, I can't have kids around and asking for a snack and be in a movie theater atmosphere. I needed to be in my office. I needed to have my computers around me. I needed to be able to pull up clips from different games from different years and playing against different coordinators. There was so much that went into my game preparation and studying that I didn't like the theater atmosphere. I like being at a desk with a computer and having all that in front of me.
Yeah, kids needing Twizzlers and got to go to the bathroom and this and that. You can't do that as you're watching film on Sunday's opponent as the Niners come to town or something like that, or the Seahawks come to town or something like that. Carson Palmer joining us here on the show. Carson, can't wait to see the special, man. I'm really looking forward to it. Thanks so much for taking the time out to do this with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. Have a great day.
My pleasure, man. Carson Palmer joining us here on the show, A Football Life. Will debut his episode coming up on Friday, and those episodes, that series is really, really good. I'm really surprised to hear him so fond of his Oakland Raiders days, because we always think about Palmer's Raiders days as kind of a debacle. He only won 8 total games in 2 years there as the starter, and obviously bad times for the Raiders, but a lot of sentimentality from him for those times and that organization and those fans. Pretty interesting. When we come back, speaking of the perfect segue, top of the hour, is there buyer's remorse as John Gruden takes the sideline and the Raiders get pounded? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.